Hi, I'm Maggie Brennan, music director here at WCBE. We're excited to announce our new web exclusive, Live from Studio A Replay, where you can listen to some of our best Studio A sessions. We're dedicated to bringing you great music from around the world and from right here in Central Ohio. And that type of extraordinary service is only possible with your support. So please, consider making a donation of any amount by clicking the red donate button at the top of the page and keep the music going. And we thank you for your support.
And this hour, we're live from Studio A with Rhett Miller. Welcome.
Hi, so nice to be here.
So nice to have you. We're really excited about the show tonight and everything going on today. It's been kind of crazy. And we were just talking how you were in Columbus last night, but it was so rainy, you really didn't get to go see the city so much.
I got to go out and have dinner with a friend, but mostly I just laid in bed and recuperated. We've been on tour a lot for the last few months, and so I needed it.
Or the last few years, too.
Yeah, for the last 2 decades.
Time sure does fly, though. It's so crazy.
It does.
But the latest CD is called Grand Theater Volume 1, and that came out in October, but there's part 2 coming up, and we'll talk about that after this first song.
All right, here we go. 1, 2.
Been snorted, bottom card's been dealt. No one knows like you know right now how truly bad it felt. All your life you wasted, yeah, dreaming about the day. Worker bees kill off their queen and carry all her eggs away. Oh, but if you die, fear and God pay. You'll go to Champaign, Illinois. Up north in Chicago, where blues makes no one blush. Memories come back to you in a double bourbon rush. Memories aren't all bad, neither, my friend, are you. There is an argument, there must be some heaven meant for hearts that are half true. Spend your whole life rolling horses into Troy. You will not go to heaven, you'll go to Champaign, Illinois. No, you will not go to heaven, you'll go to Champaign, Blacktop Highway, circles towards the sun. Springfield's in the distance, that's the last big one. After that comes judgment, oh, and judgment will be swift. You will be eliminated, but here's a parting gift. Oh, if you die, fear and God.
Awesome. Rhett Miller live from Studio A. You just heard Champaign, Illinois. It's off the latest album, the Grand Theater, Volume 1, and kind of a reworking of an older tune from some people might know.
A guy named Bob Dylan, a young up-and-comer. I'm trying to help him out.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm obviously a big Dylan fan, as are most people that do what I do. But there's his record, Highway 61, is right at the top of the list. And there's a song on there called Desolation Row. And I was keeping myself awake during a late-night drive a number of years ago now. And I, in order to, you know, keep myself from going crazy or falling asleep, I rewrote the lyrics to this Dylan tune. And nothing to do with his lyrics, really, because, I mean, he had 10 verses, and it's really an amazing lyric, that Desolation Row, because he goes through all this fantastical stuff, and you think he's just sort of making up this sort of absurdist scene. And in the end, he makes it very, like, personal between this, you know, the narrator and this woman that's writing him this letter, and it becomes this really beautiful thing. So Dylan's original lyric needed no help, but I, you know, rewrote it anyway, because why not? And I had so much fun playing it over the years, but I never recorded it because I was afraid of Dylan's legal team. They're notoriously vigilant. And finally, I said, you know what? This song is too good to just sit on for the rest of my life. Let's at least find out if Dylan will okay it. And we've got a great new manager for the last few years named Danny Goldberg, and he knows Dylan's manager. And he went to Dylan's manager and said, can you please at least get Dylan to listen to this? Because I think he'll like it. And Dylan's guy said, well, you know, we turn down 100 of these out of hand every day. But if it's important.
Wow.
And Danny said, it's important. And I heard back 2 weeks later, Dylan loves it, but he wants to read the lyrics. So then there's a whole other thing where I'm frantically typing the lyrics out for Bob Dylan to read and approve. And I heard back the next day, Dylan likes it so much that he wants to let you guys keep half the publishing, which we hadn't even asked for.
Well, that's another sweet end of it, huh?
Very sweet. And kind of cool. I mean, and appropriate given Dylan's, you know, all of his first years were spent taking borrowed melodies and rewriting lyrics to him.
Right. So how long, when did you write this? Or
that was about 10 years ago that I wrote this and sat on it. Everything else on the record is brand new, but this song got stuck in, you know, legal limbo.
Uh-huh. And then Danny Goldberg, he's been in the industry for some time. But, well, that's great. Congratulations on the approval on that and the rights as well, the shared rights. So volume two, you guys put them out so fast. So much material and so...
It was
going to
be
space.
A double album, and then I found out that nobody likes double albums anymore, apparently, which is really sad. I mean, you know, there's been so many great double albums over the course of rock and roll's history, but it's a new era. I guess attention spans being what they are and the marketplace being what it is,
right.
It made more sense to everybody to release them in two volumes, which was fine with me because it gave me a chance to write a couple of new songs for volume two and polish up some of the ones that we had already on volume two, and that'll come out the beginning of July, volume two comes out.
All right, and I think he's going to play one, maybe give us a debut of that.
Yeah, this is one
debut.
Of my favorite songs off Volume 2, and I am proud to play it for y'all here on WCBE.
Thank you so much.
When you explode into the room, all I can smell is your perfume and the cigarette jazzing up the atmosphere. You think it's fine, I know it's broke. You think it's all some kind of joke. But how can I laugh while I'm locked up in here? And it's a beautiful day outside. It's a beautiful day outside. I press my nose against the glass. I steam it up, but it don't last. I am a man after all, and I'm dying here. I had it good, now I get none. I had it all, but those days are done. Now I get to watch you run around out there. It's a beautiful day outside. And it's a beautiful day outside. There's all these girls outside wrapped up in winter clothes. My imagination grows. I can't convince my eyes to close. You're on the town again and I'm drowning in your bed. Your perfume is in my head and it's driving me, driving me, driving me, driving me. And it's a beautiful day outside.
Rhett Miller, it's a beautiful day inside right now with Rhett live from Studio A, and that'll be on the upcoming Grand Theater Volume 2. That'll be put out in July, right?
July 5th.
July 5th. Putting you know, just the material, the great material you've had over the past couple of decades, not only with the old 97s and your solo releases. Now, you know, part two coming up. So the turnaround was fairly quick,
quick
from the first one. Putting that much, having that much material, does it, do you feel compelled to put it out faster? And is there less second guessing in the recording process?
That's actually, that's a really good point. We did these records super live. I mean, it's funny. Some people think because the name of the album is the Grand Theater Volume 1 that it's a live album, mm-hmm. but it's not. I mean, we went into a studio to record it, but the way we recorded it was old school in the sense that we kept everything that was live. Almost every vocal on the record was the live vocal that I cut while the drums were being recorded, cool. and the bass and the rhythm guitars and most of the leads. You know, it's a maybe a testament to our band's longevity and experience together that we can do that. But not many bands do it anymore. And I think there's something that really comes through on a subconscious level for the listener when they realize that something has not been constructed in a Pro Tools session but has been performed mm-hmm. live. There's a real visceral, unconscious element that I think is gained by that recording process.
And when you go back to thinking about your first album, what was that? Was it so
That's
different?
Funny.
Well, things have changed a lot, but yeah, tell us about that.
The first album we made was 1994. Uh-huh. And that was, if we only had 3 days to record that record. So talk about being live. I mean, that was that was done by necessity very, very quickly. And it's still, I mean, I still am really proud of that record. And our first couple of records were both done very quickly. And you can tell sonically, but I still think they hold up, you know, as good documents of where we were. And here we are 18 and a half years later. It's
yeah.
crazy.
And there's a great video of a song from the first album, I believe, your first album on your Facebook page. And you guys are like right in the beginning.
Oh, the
video.
Was it that song, St. Ignatius?
Yes, yes.
And we had a girl playing drums in the video.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That was, we made the demo that they made that video from right before Philip joined the band. And we didn't have a full-time drummer. And we'd gone down to Austin and we got this great drummer, Lisa Pankratz, to play drums on it. But then another Lisa, a girl I was dating at the time, Lisa Delarios, came and pretended to drum in the video. And then we hired Philip right when we were finishing the video, and we let him come and do some little intro piece so that he at least was in the video. But it was, yeah, it was all very ground level stuff in our band.
Yeah, and you can check that out on their Facebook page. And you just mentioned Austin. Of course, you guys started out in Dallas, and now a couple of you still there. You're in New York, and somebody... Yeah.
Murray's in Pasadena, California, okay. And so, I'm in Gardner, New York, just outside New Paltz, just outside Manhattan.
And Austin, well, of course, the annual South by Southwest concert has just gotten humongous.
Yeah.
And tell us about your first experience there, and do you go every year?
I've been, let's see, they had their 25th or 20th anniversary. Yeah. I think it was 20th. And I've probably been 12 to 14 of those years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, my earliest experiences with it were just driving down as a teenager, a teen folkie, and going and playing on the street and just hanging out in the lobby of the Four Seasons Hotel. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think in my earliest days there, I really thought there were people there knew a secret that I was trying to discover. And then now, so deep in, I realize that nobody knows anything. I mean, all they know is that, you know, there's some company that's letting them, you know, expense their way through this crazy weekend of debauchery. And, you know, it's kind of nice. It's nice to not be so worried about it. But I owe South by a lot. You know, the 97s were signed out of a huge, you know, bidding war that came out of a big showcase we did there. I mean, it was the year leading up to it of work that we did that culminated in that South by experience. But that's what it's for. You know, it's to give everybody a place to be in one place, you know, when things are really happening. And for us, it really worked in 1997 or whatever it was.
And you guys had a few shows there this time around, too, didn't
they? They booked us. We had 7 gigs in a 36-hour period.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. And then the Dallas Mavericks.
The next day, we had to go and play a gig in Texas. And the day after that, we played a big show outside the Mavericks. And then I finished the whole, I think it was my ninth performance in 48 hours was to sing the anthem for the Mavericks, which, you know, there's not many times 17,000 people are absolutely silent, focused on one person who's doing something that's kind of difficult. I've sung the anthem a lot, but it never gets any less nerve-wracking. You're always so grateful when you hit the Rockets' red glare, but you're like, okay, I didn't screw up the tough parts. I mean, it's so antiquated, the language of it. And to remember all those subjunctive clauses as they're flowing through, I can understand why Christina Aguilera had a big problem with it.
Yeah, or anybody. I mean, it's just, that's some pressure, you know?
Yeah.
But now, sports fans, are you guys, or not so much?
Yeah, I'm a huge hockey fan. In fact, my Dallas Stars really need to win against the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight in Dallas.
Allison's our huge hockey fan over there.
Oh, man. I mean, we're 3 points out of the playoff picture, and we have 4 games left. So if we can beat Columbus. So I'm not saying you guys need to throw the game. Just maybe let this one... Give us a pass on this one.
We'll have to see about that. But Rhett, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thanks for being a great radio station. And I'm really hoping you guys get the rest of the money to meet your goal and keep going, because, you know, this is a great thing for your community.
Thank you so much. And I love what you've done all these years. And I'm glad to finally have you here.
Thanks.
Rhett Miller. And what's this last one you're going to do?
Every night is Friday Night Without You.
Awesome. Thanks again.